We all know what it's like to be stuck in traffic gridlock, and some cities have it worse than others. As old cities grow, the street plans of previous generations prove unsuitable for 21st century modes of transportation. In London, planners are trying to reduce congestion by charging drivers who wish to take their vehicles into the center of town. From the British capital, Alistair Wanklin reports.
Midday in central London, and on Piccadilly Circus, the traffic is backed up as far as the eye can see. The only vehicles that seem to be making much headway here are bicycles and motorcycles. Soon, the drivers of trucks and cars will be forced to pay a $7 or $8 daily charge to bring their vehicles into the centre of London.
What we're aiming to do is actually solve London's congestion problems.
Charging a fee on vehicles is projected to reduce traffic in London city centre by 10 to 15%, according to project designer Derek Turner of the organisation Transport for London. At present, every day, 250,000 vehicles use the central streets to shift goods and people, and they will all be affected.
This is going to result in us having to put in additional facilities for people to be able to make their journeys, and particularly in terms of buses and bus priority measures.
Conversion of streets to take buses and cyclists only is well underway in London, and around 250 video cameras are being installed on street corners to enforce the congestion charging. Computers will watch any vehicle in view and read its registration plate. Drivers will pay the $7 or $8 fee either in advance or on the day of the journey, or face fines ranging from $60 to a term in jail. Some vehicles will be exempt, such as ambulances, buses and the automobiles of people who live within the zone of control. But linked into a national database of vehicle registrations, the camera system is designed to be rigorous.
What I like to describe our system is a 21st century low-tech scheme, because what we're actually using is a scheme which actually relies on cameras for enforcement, but there is nothing actually in the car. We'd like to see full electronic road pricing, but really to do it all at one big bang at the start is not really feasible.
Full electronic pricing is something adopted, however, by some other cities around the world. Drivers in Singapore place special ID cards in their windshield, which identifies the vehicle as it enters restricted zones. And in Toronto, Canada, drivers agree to fix a radio transponder inside the vehicle, which allows charging per mile travelled. But these high-tech schemes would take too long to implement in London, according to Derek Turner. And he says other cities worldwide are watching London's experiment with low-tech video cameras.
There's a lot of interest in this. Tokyo's interested in it, but we've got lots of interest from the European countries, particularly Berlin, Paris, and also in this country, we are sort of leading the way. I think the whole world of the transport planning community are looking at this, because this is the first big city that has tried to do something quite as sophisticated and as radical as this.
In developing nations, the urban environment frequently suffers in the same way from traffic congestion, but solutions here may be very different. If China had the same per capita automobile usage as the US, China would have to pave over 60% of its arable land. So it's not possible for some countries to acquire vehicles at the rate of developed nations. The UN Human Environment Agency, Habitat, has a transport program that encourages developing nations such as Thailand or the Philippines to prevent gridlock. Speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, Director Brian Williams says there are alternatives.
We encourage or we promote the idea of basically realistic and viable alternatives to overuse of the private automobile to meet future transport needs, and that includes emphasizing travel by public transport, encouraging travel by non-motorized transport means, that's walking and bicycling, which in some developing city context is already very much in existence, but is being threatened by the overuse of the private automobile.
In many cities of developing countries, around half of urban trips are on foot. The vast majority of these are the urban poor, who must walk 2 hours or so every day to work. The Habitat program aims to encourage nations to invest in urban buses, which offer low-cost mass transit with only minimal investment in infrastructure.
Actually, one of the rages in urban transport service provision in developing country cities right now is something called bus rapid transit, which essentially consists of a grade separated, segregated busway with a little bit higher technology loading and offloading of passengers, and obviously electronic ticketing, which we are finding actually a great deal of that expense is covered from the fare box, and people are really willing to pay an appropriate fare to make that service work.
And it's not only potential passengers in developing nations who are keen on sustainable transport systems. Governments, too, have in recent years shown increasing interest in adopting them, according to Habitat's Brian Williams.
Primarily due to simply choking traffic congestion to such an extent that economic productivity of urban residents has been seriously in decline in the recent, say, 5 years. I'm seeing a new willingness and a new openness to accept that the urban transport patterns that have been developed in the West are basically should not be copied wholesale in southern cities, and that a third way can actually be created, and that a preemptive strike can be made to move to more sustainable transport systems before automobile-based development is so entrenched as it is, say, in more wealthy northern cities.
Wealthy or not, traffic gridlock wastes time and hampers economic growth. But from the traffic-choked cities of Southeast Asia to the new congestion charging system in the British capital, it seems things are on the move. For Common Ground, I'm Alastair Wanklin in London.